Welcome back to the From the Point podcast. I am your co-host, Andy Stashu, in our new recording studio overlooking Kensington in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I'm with my co-host, as always,
Jim Malloy.
And we are ready to rock and roll. Let's go. All right. Let's talk about the Calgary Flames. They are back from their break. And some interesting and intriguing games to talk about, for sure.
Two games back.
Back-to-back to start it off, which is a little bit ridiculous. Whatever. And, you know, it's always fun after that five-day break that we get the compressed schedule for the rest of the season. Yeah. So it's like, do players really enjoy just playing, like, every other night or tons of back-to-backs to finish off the season? I can't imagine that's very fun.
No, I think the only thing they enjoy about it is keeping the 82 games in the schedule and the revenue. Yeah. I can't imagine it's fun playing so, like, just so often.
No. So we play the St. Louis Blues in the first game back at home. Interesting game. The Blues had played the night before in Vancouver, and they definitely came in looking quite tired. I thought the Blues played quite a sloppy game pretty much the entire game.
Yeah, I mean, three goals against on Talbot and eight shots in the first period is tough.
Yeah.
Given that Calgary was carrying, I thought the play. That was a little disappointing. But St. Louis' problem with them is that they're just so accustomed to winning that even having a bad start or having sloppy play, like, they're just not out of games, I don't think.
Nope, not at all. It's funny you mentioned Talbot. So this is something I forgot to bring up last week when we were talking about stuff. I was not happy that he did not get a single start on the Flames' final three games before the All-Star break.
Right.
Especially after David Riddick got added to the All-Star roster, so you knew he was going to get some work in during All-Star festivities, whatever level or quality that was. I mean, he's still on skates. Like, he's not drinking in Mexico still or something like that, right? So
yeah. So I mean, really, we're talking about that Ottawa game.
Yeah,
because it makes sense. Like, Toronto made sense for Riddick.
Exactly. You got him back in Montreal. Yeah. He played really well, deserved the start in Toronto, played out of his mind, but then immediately said afterwards how tired he was.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay. And then you're playing Ottawa as an afternoon game on the Saturday, and they're like a lame duck opponent, and Talbot was hot going into that. He won five straight, like, and he looked really good. And he plays that game against St. Louis, and boy, did he ever look shaky as all anything. Like, how many times did he look behind him on shots he stopped?
Yeah.
Like, he didn't even realize he still had it type thing.
Oh, I know. And, I mean, the only reason they even got into overtime was the offside. Like, it was a close offside.
Disallowed goal. Yeah. one of the only challenges that's worked for us all season.
Yeah.
Like, unbelievable.
That was a horrible goal.
The fourth goal was horrible. The fifth one was even worse. I think almost every goal was pretty awful, except I want to say there was a cross crease on a power play that he had no chance or something. But
a steam goal.
Yeah, almost everything was savable, stoppable, or at least somewhat more challengeable.
So yeah,
it was not a good performance.
He hadn't played
for him
in a while,
like three friggin' weeks or something like that. Like, it's just, I don't. I was so mad at the decision not to play him on that road trip, and there was no reason behind not playing him. So, and this is kind of you reap what you sow type thing, right?
Yeah.
And I hate to bag on Jeff Ward, because I think he's done a pretty admirable job taking over the team this year, but that feels like a very poor decision from an interim head coach for sure.
Yeah, you wonder. And, I mean, the goalie coach is in on that too, because you would think that he would be there reminding the coaching
fighting for
staff.
His other guy, right?
Saying, like, we got to keep this guy playing some games. And then to come right back with him when he hadn't played that long.
Yeah.
Pretty surprising. So moving out of the St. Louis game, although I do want to mention that Ryan O'Reilly game winner, like the shootout winner.
Oh, my
was
God.
Unreal.
Oh, and we should also say, like, despite the Flames' defensive game looking like, everyone on defense was still asleep, the offense looked pretty damn good that game.
Yeah, I mean, three power play goals.
Yeah, I was going to say, three power play goals was awesome. Yeah. Like, and, like, nice goals, like Monahan scoring a two and stuff like that. So you like to see that kind of stuff. So at least the team was scoring a lot of goals, getting some confidence back in that respect, right? I thought Sam Bennett looked really dangerous in that game.
I thought Johnny looked better too.
Oh yeah, he seemed to have an extra step again type thing. Yeah, it was kind of a nice, it was a nice game. It was unfortunate they didn't win, but again, you go into a shootout, and especially going into a shootout, as we said, with Talbot looking as shaky as he did. The second we went into the shootout, I'm like, we're going to lose this for sure.
Yeah. Well, what I was hoping for when I saw just how Talbot was playing, like you mentioned, looking behind him all the time, I was hoping they would at least get a point, which they did, and that set them up, I think, well for the next game.
Right. Yeah. So they play back-to-back, pretty much like the most highly touted rematch secondary Battle of Alberta at in our 27 years of actually remembering and paying attention to hockey.
Yeah, like, for sure. Since the most significant one in this century.
Yeah, since the 1990 or 1991, I think, playoff series.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean,
and that game had some heat. Like, if you went on Twitter, I mean, there was people from all over the league commenting on the game. Like, it
couldn't have lined up better. It's like it's a national game.
Yep.
Like, tons and tons of hype. Obviously, the Cassie and Tkachuk stuff. Like, everything about it. I mean, the fact that the Pacific Division's so darn close. Like, all of it is just going into it was such a huge, huge swirling thing. And I'm almost glad that they got a game in before that with the St. Louis game. Like you said, it set them up nicely because they played semi-well in that game. Mm-hmm. Well enough to win, for sure. That could have easily been a trap game for them. And then it got them to be able to focus on the Edmonton game that day type thing.
Right. And also, I think a reminder to actually play hockey, like to come back and have to play against the Stanley Cup champions. I think that's a good reminder of what the goal is.
Right.
Like the goal isn't just to beat Edmonton and to come out on top in like some crazy game that gets out of hand. The goal is to beat Edmonton so that we get a better playoff position than them.
Totally. And playing a team like St. Louis, obviously measuring stick, considering they're top team in the West. So not only is defending Stanley Cup champions, top team in the West. So
absolutely. So let's talk about this for a second, because I saw some people commenting on it and I think it's an interesting topic. What do you think is the reasoning behind NBC not picking up the Calgary versus Edmonton game for their rivalry night? Like, it's literally, that was rivalry night.
Yeah, that's how they
built
it.
Their national game was LA versus Tampa Bay, two teams that have absolutely no history against each other whatsoever.
And one team that is like so far out of it already that, like, why bother like televise it, right?
And Tampa is not a popular team. Like,
not across the states. No, they are in their market.
But yeah. Oh, for sure. In their market, they are.
For sure. They're not a marketable team across the U.S.
But like, you would think that the NHL would see this, would realize that this is a huge marketing opportunity and try to take advantage of it. Like other leagues do.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say the NFL does that, right? Yeah. Because they have the ability to flex two games throughout the season. So if they did it in the last Sunday of this year, and I think that was the only game they ended up flexing, but you basically have the ability to bump up a game that is earlier in the day, be it the 11 a.m. Calgary time, so a 1 p.m. Eastern or whatever time, or the 4 o'clock game, bump that up into the primetime game instead, so it's got all the attention on it and all that kind of stuff, right? And then bump down a game that has less significance.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, exactly. Why wouldn't you? And, like, does it really matter that it's two Canadian teams?
Well, it doesn't, because it's Connor McDavid.
Right.
And then it's a rivalry game. It's a well-known rivalry. And also, I think, like, Calgary had 3 All-Stars.
Yeah.
Matthew, I mean, we'll talk about the All-Star game later, but Matthew Tkachuk, I think, was a pretty significant part of that All-Star game.
Right.
And there are two teams that were, like, coming out of the All-Star break tied in the standings.
Like, yeah, everything lined up for it to be a
huge game. Yeah. Could have been a huge opportunity to show, like, their teams.
And showcase the league, right? And it's funny you say stuff like that, because having worked in and around the NHL a lot, I feel like they have a lot of those missed opportunities to do things like that. And I don't know what the hesitation behind it really is. And I don't think they can really justify it, because all the things we just laid out, if their only defense is, well, it's two Canadian teams and no one in the States will care. It's like, I think hockey fans care.
Yeah.
Because everyone's been paying attention. They care more
than Tampa versus LA. Like,
yeah.
I mean, if I can kind of understand it if you're saying, okay, we don't want to bump Chicago or Boston or something.
Right. Like, huge market team.
Right. Like an original six team. But in this case, you have the number one superstar in the league. You've got two teams that had like a bizarre exchange of players over the summer. So there's already a whole bunch of storylines. And then there's the biggest news story going in the NHL, going into the All-Star break. Yeah. Everyone's anticipating this crazy thing. There's billboards going up. There's t-shirts being made.
Literally, we've had 10 days to talk about this game.
Yeah.
Like 10 and full days.
And it came through.
Yeah. It lived up to the hype.
It totally lived up to the hype. So I don't know. It was a weird decision in my mind for a league that's looking to, like, they've got to know that playoff hockey is their number one selling point. It's the best time to watch hockey. But the closest you're going to get to that are hated rivals who are coming now towards the home stretch fighting for playoff position.
Yeah.
It seems like a missed opportunity.
Totally. All right. So, like we just said, the game itself lived up to the hype. I remember you messaging like 5 minutes into the game and being like, hey, I want to see some violence. I want to see some emotion. Nothing's happening. And I was like, I don't know if anything is going to happen. And then stuff happened. Flames scored early, which again,
it looked like it was Tkachuk too.
I know, which was amazing. Like the amount of cheering and booing at the same time was awesome. And then the first fight of the night is maybe the most unexpected fight you'll ever find in Sean Monahan versus Ryan Nugent Hopkins. I loved Monahan's description afterwards of it, where he's like, well, I thought I was going to take a penalty, so I figured I might as well try and take him down with me. And I was just like, all right, sure, why not? He said he hasn't fought since junior, so I mean, that's at least 8 years probably.
I thought the descriptions were pretty good, that it was like not a lot of technique but a lot of heart on both parts. And like, credit to Nugent Hopkins, like I actually was really surprised at him popping back into the fight and getting a couple shots in there. I thought that was good.
Yeah, it was good. I like Monahan getting both their helmets off, like in sort of like a kind of like slick, dignified way.
Yep.
Like it was kind of like that was cool.
Neither of them wanted to break their hands.
No, exactly. And then, he gets a couple shots in. They break up. Nugent Hopkins get a couple shots in, and then Monahan gets a takedown. So, all in all, a good fight. And then we get the scrap between Tkachuk and Cassian.
Yep.
He did it.
I thought he would.
I figured his dad probably gave him an earful about that he had to do it type thing. Although the way he described it afterwards, he's like, people kept telling me I didn't have to do it, and that just made me want to do it more. So I'm like, well, that's kind of awesome. So good for him.
Yeah.
Good on him for doing it. He definitely didn't win that fight.
Nope. He got tuned a little, but yeah.
Yeah, but whatever. You know what? At the same time, he's got, 50, 60 pounds? Cassian does on Tkachuk, so
I don't know. They were saying 9 pounds, which seems like a small difference. Cassian seems bigger than that.
Yeah, for sure.
So the fight I thought was interesting because Tkachuk tried to get a couple, like he tried to jump in and get some shots and get an advantage early in the fight, it seemed.
Right. Which is apparently something Brian McGrattan told him to do.
Yeah?
Yeah, Brian McGrattan told him to go at him.
Yeah.
Because that way he couldn't square up and get, like, really good shots on him. So, smart.
All right, yeah. That makes some sense. Unfortunately, Cassian does seem pretty experienced at fighting, and he ducked under the big haymaker.
Yeah.
And Cassian's also a lefty. So he ducked under the haymaker, and then he got a couple shots in.
Yeah.
But I thought Tkachuk did a good job, and then he didn't quit in the fight either.
No. Yeah, he went down on the ice, but then he was like, he basically kind of like leg locked
him. Yeah, he kind of like dragged him down.
Whatever. So,
yeah, it's and
I think that was a satisfying result for everyone.
For everyone, because I'm sure like Oiler fans wanted to see him lose the fight. Flames fans wanted to see him. I mean, not everybody, but I think most people wanted to see him stand up for himself.
Yep.
Cassian and a lot of guys around the league wanted him to show he's going to answer the bell.
Yep.
And I think the Flames players probably wanted him to fight too. Like, I think they probably didn't want it to be this thing that they're dealing with all the time.
Right.
That it was Tkachuk started the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I think everybody appreciates that he took care of his own business.
Yep, I agree. So then we move on to the rest of the game. And the best part about it is by getting all that stuff out of the first period, which was satisfying, then the game was on from then on.
Yeah.
And it was a fun game.
And, I mean, we should mention Riddick in the first period was outstanding.
He made a beautiful save on Connor McDavid on a breakaway.
Yeah, yeah, McDavid just split the D and got a breakaway, tried to go to the blocker side, and Riddick just stuck with him the whole way.
I noticed on the replay it was really interesting. He stuck his leg out to kind of stop him, and then he pulled it back in, like knowing that Connor was going to hang on and try and like tuck it around him type thing. And that's basically what made the save. So I was like, oh, that's kind of a cool like thing that he thought of and picked up on type thing. He was, I'll say this much. Riddick was pretty damn good in that game.
Yep.
I know he was mad about the third goal he let in.
Yeah. The third goal wasn't very good.
But just cause he moved on it and he shouldn't have, and he knew it right away. But I mean, he kept the Flames in it when the Oilers had pressure. I would say the same for Mike Smith, but Some of his questionable goaltending decisions were bailed out by a little bit more luck than anything. Like that puck that basically crossed the line, but
that
didn't.
That was so close. All right, the weird thing on that one is they showed an angle that it looked like it was in, like from way above the net.
Yeah.
And then
they
never showed that again. They just showed the in-net camera angle. But that's not a good angle for that because it's from behind the puck.
Right.
Looking down on it.
Right.
So you can't see right in front of it. So I found it so frustrating because it really did look like it was in from the one angle. But I mean, presumably.
If they can't definitively say that you can see white all around it. And I think that's what they were saying. Like maybe like.
Yeah. That's like, as close as you can get to a goal.
Without going scoring. Over.
Yeah.
And of course it was on a play where he did one of his showboat saves that I always hated.
I don't know. Smith, I mean, credit to him. He did make some big saves. The breakaway save on Ryan was huge because that would have been 4-2.
Yes.
He had his moments. I mean, I think we all recognize that's what he can do. Like, that's what he did for the Flames last year.
He made
big saves at big times in the second half of the year.
Yep.
So as much as we make fun of the Oilers for their goaltending decisions, he's a guy I think like there's a really good chance that he can play well enough to get them to the playoffs.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Especially since he has had a bit more momentum on his side lately. The other thing we should mention about this game in terms of the excitement was how well Andrew Mangiapane played.
Yes.
Two outstanding goals. The second one in particular where he waited out Smith and then roofed it on him was awesome. I thought he was really good in the St. Louis game and just seemed to be like a little snake bitten, like just didn't have that finish. And then, I don't know, he was like engaged. He was like emotional in that game against Edmonton. And you could tell. And then when he was scoring goals, you're just like, oh yeah, here we go. Like he was just dialed right in.
He really didn't seem to like Yamamoto very
much.
It's like they're the same size. And
he was like encroaching on him. That was like right after Yamamoto scored too. And I was like, okay, we're going to have our third fight here. Like,
I know. The bantamweight fight. That would have been cool.
Yeah.
I really liked his first goal too. Like great play by Bennett. And
So I noticed this in the game. Cause I really liked the way Bennett played in St. Louis, like I said, and he was playing well again against Edmonton. Like, he seems to have a little bit more offensive jump. He was making smarter decisions. And one of them that led to the goal was that he brought the puck into the zone and then he kind of got trapped. And instead of making a bad decision in like trying to force the puck into the middle or anything like that, he smartly kind of fell and dumped it into the corner, which kept the play alive in the offensive zone. They were able to recover it. Then he gets it again back around the back of the net, passes out in front, and they score. So I was like, you know what? That was a... It was a key decision to make a smart play there and keep the play alive in the zone versus attempt something that 90% of the time will turn into a turnover and then the puck's going the other way, right? So I was really very happy with his decision-making on that goal.
He seems like he's getting a little bit more rope. I believe his ice time's gone up in the last couple games. I think
it was really noticeable.
I think he's up in 16, 17 minutes now.
Yeah.
So that's good news because Sam Bennett does seem to get better as the games get more important.
Yeah.
His strength is not consistent production throughout the season. His strength is at big moments. He plays a little bit better. And it seems like Mangiapane is a little bit similar, to be honest.
Yeah.
So those are good signs for sure.
So Flames end up getting it all the way to a shootout. The Oilers tied it kind of with about 8 minutes left in the game. Nothing going in overtime. A little bit back and forth, but a little bit sloppy, I thought.
Yeah.
Overtime.
Couple notable things in overtime. I think that TJ Brody was outstanding.
He did have that amazing chance. I forgot about
that. Yeah, he got a breakaway. He also, Draisaitl was on a 2-on-1 bearing down, and he was going so fast, like Brody was, that he actually, he skated back, and he just, there was a forward trying to play the 2-on-1, and you could just see him. He was like, no. He's like, you go over there. And he tracked down Draisaitl, shut him down. Connor McDavid went head-to-head against Rasmus Andersson like 3 times, I think, and was shut down all 3, which I thought was really cool. Like, that's as hard of a matchup as a guy's possibly going to get. And Andersson can do it.
Yeah, he can.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, it was awesome.
For a guy who's, like, not, like, skating is not, he's not a bad skater, but, like, it's not a huge strength of his. So, yeah, the 3-on-3, not as great a chances as you might expect. I was surprised to see that Edmonton's 2-4 in overtime.
Which is weird.
Given their options.
Yeah, and it always feels like whenever I turn it on and they go in overtime, they score like 30 seconds in.
I know.
Right? Like, so maybe that's from previous seasons and I'm just kind of blending things together or whatever. But yeah, no, there was some stuff in overtime. I thought it was a little sloppier than the St. Louis one before.
Yeah.
And then we get into the shootout, and man, David Riddick is having himself a season in shootouts this year.
Well, it's like, grateful to post.
Yes. And you know what? And the best part about it is he's such a like a nice and humble guy that he actually like acknowledges that. He can't not, but he's smart about it. He doesn't boast. He's not like I mean, he boasts when he wins because he's an emotional guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that amazing celly after he stopped Draisaitl. Yeah.
Well, he acknowledged that he was fortunate.
Yeah.
From the post.
Exactly, right? But yeah, you can't take it all himself after the game, right?
You see him kiss the post?
Yeah, I love when he does that. He does that a lot.
That's funny. Yeah, Fleury does that too. So how did you like the Jose Bautista-esque bat flip?
I loved it.
I loved it.
Hockey just needs more of that. I think I said to you when nothing was really happening in it, it's just like, There's too much vanilla in hockey.
There definitely is.
Yeah. They need more stuff like this. And Riddick is like, he's like the Hasek kind of crazy. Like he's a really outgoing goaltender, which is so bizarre for goaltenders. If anyone has ever played with a goaltender before, they're usually very calm and reserved and can sometimes be a little quirky and odd and all that kind of stuff. But he's so outgoing and he likes to be around his teammates and he's so emotional. Like he wants to win, but he's not the bad kind of emotional where he blames everyone else when things don't go right. He takes ownership of when he plays poorly. He just wears everything out on his sleeve. And that's the kind of guy you want on your team. That's going to like live and die to win you games. Right. So,
it's fun to watch. I mean, he's an entertainer. I think it's interesting that the last time him and Draisaitl were together at the end of a game, they were hugging because they had won the All-Star game together. And I think he's just like, he's not malicious, right? Like he's not staring him down because he hates him. He's staring him down because he's just in the moment.
Right.
And he wanted to win really bad and he did. So that was really cool. It was weird though. Like I was wondering what the hell he was doing. And then it was great. Like once you get it into like GIF form.
Oh,
y'all, it's wonderful. Yeah.
So, I mean, awesome for all of us fans. The next game we get to watch the team play is against Edmonton yet again, back here in Calgary for round 4 of the Battle of Alberta.
Yep.
Although it'll be interesting to see what kind of emotional stakes are brought into this one. I hope it's more like the awesome hockey we've gotten in the last 2 games where it's back and forth, like one goal game, like one goal leads, that kind of thing. Cause it's just so damn exciting to watch. And the teams are actually putting on decent amounts of display of skill.
Yeah.
I'll be curious to see which goaltender they go with. Cause Edmonton plays at home on Friday against St. Louis. So I wonder if they'll go with Smith at home and Koskinen on the road, because I don't know if they'd have the confidence to play Smith in Calgary yet. But we've scored more on Koskinen this year, so I just don't, and overall, so I just don't know where the thinking will be on that.
I would go with Smith against Calgary. So, if I was them, I would play Koskinen at home and then Smith. I think Smith is just better equipped for a rivalry game than Koskinen is.
He, as we know from having him from 2 years, he gets so emotionally dialed in. Like, he's a very big competitor. Yeah. So yeah, it would make sense. I wonder if the crowd will get on him.
Oh, hopefully they do.
Yeah, that's just part of it, right? So, yeah.
Well, the last time he played, everyone was saying Smitty, so now it'd be Smitty.
Yeah.
I think it'll be awesome. So the Flames, just as an update, they're 27-19-6. With 60 points, they're in second place in the Pacific Division right now. Vancouver's 2 points ahead of them with 62 points. They do have a game in hand, and Edmonton actually has 2 games in hand on Calgary, and they're 2 points back. Surprisingly, Calgary is one of the hottest teams in the league in the last 10 games. They're 7-2-1, which, given some of the spotty performances, you might forget that, but right. Yeah, they've been oddly successful this year, despite their, sporadic struggles.
Still got to get that goal differential up, but, after the Edmonton game, they have San Jose at home and Nashville at home. So I'm thinking there's a good chance against two teams that are, well, one team that is really struggling this year, and one team that is...
Talk about goal differential. Yeah. San Jose's minus 38.
Yeah. So fingers crossed, team can...
Do you see Hurdle just got hurt out for the year?
Yeah. So I know that season needs to end for San Jose for sure. So. Yeah. It'll be a good week for the Flames, hopefully. And I'm excited to see what Saturday brings. All right, off into period two now. NHL is doing the back half of their mandated breaks. So the other 15/16 teams that weren't off before the All-Star break are now off, and I think should be coming back in and around this weekend. So not a whole lot of news going on. So we thought we'd talk about All-Star weekend.
Absolutely.
And our thoughts behind it. So what do you make of the whole festivities? I thought St. Louis did a great job hosting. The skills were interesting, as they normally are.
Yeah, I mean, let's go through the skills. Okay. So it opened with the fastest skater.
Yep, and a shocker.
Yeah.
Matthew Barzal beats Connor McDavid in the fastest skater, which, I was blown away by that.
Yeah, I mean, I know people were close to him before. Like, it's not like he was 2 seconds ahead of everybody or anything.
Yeah, no, fair.
But yeah, it's always surprising to see, because as good as Barzal is, and we don't get to see him that much, but you don't, like, I don't know that I think of him as blazing past people. I know he does have great edges though, so I think that might have been what the difference was, because it seemed to me that he took a shorter route than McDavid. So I think McDavid actually went faster.
Interesting.
But I think that Barzal kept
tighter.
Cut it quite a bit tighter, I think. So that seemed to me to be the difference. Weird thing is that, well, one, it's weird that Chris Kreider is that fast. I'm like, for a big guy, holy is he fast.
Yeah, he's got long legs too. Holy cow.
And two, I don't understand why Schofield didn't compete.
Yeah.
Like, what? I mean, I thought that was one of the best parts of the last season, is seeing if she could keep up, and she beat a bunch of people. So it would have been kind of cool to see her go. I mean, maybe she didn't want to, but
who knows?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of too bad, actually.
I agree with you there. Yeah, that's definitely a missed opportunity for sure.
Yeah. So, the hardest shot competition is what it is. I mean, I don't think it's hugely entertaining. It is kind of cool when there's surprises, though. And I thought Elias Pettersson...
being in it was a surprise for me.
Yeah, and shooting, like 102.4, I think.
Yeah, he beat Gio.
He beat Gio.
I mean, Gio broke 100, so I was happy for him.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. Like, Pettersson, you got to think, how good is this guy going to get? Like, when he when he fills out, like, he still looks like he's about 170 pounds. He's 6'2". Like, he's going to be a monster. Yeah. He's already an exceptional player. Yeah. But, yeah, just incredible skill set on that guy.
Yeah. No, and a great team guy all around, too.
Yeah. Well, how about Washington? You got Ovechkin, and then it turns out you also have Carlson, who can shoot almost 105. And then he wasn't even the winner. It was Shea Weber. I mean, no surprise there. I think there's a weird thing about the hardest shot in that it's always kind of satisfying when the guys you expect to win.
Yeah.
Like when Chara comes out and you're just like, oh, yeah, he can shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But should we also mention the fact that in the AHL All-Star game, the hardest shot was officially the record was officially broken by Martin Frick, who has been up and down this year. He's in Los Angeles Kings player and currently in the AHL with the Ontario Reign. What did he hit, like 107 something?
Was he like 109?
Holy cow.
He beat Chara.
No, I know he beat Chara.
Best. Yeah. Yeah, he's that's crazy.
I know. So, and the neat thing about that, like, coming out afterwards, we're like, goalies being like, yeah, he has a really hard shot. Like,
yeah.
So
I
go figure.
You know what? I'm glad that happened, because for people that aren't that connected to hockey, I think that you can fool yourself into believing that NHLers are the best at everything. Like, they have the hardest shot and the fastest and the best skills and stuff. But it's not true. Like, you can even see if you live in a Canadian city, and you go and watch ice times in the summer where, like, there'll be some NHL guys in the camp. There'll be junior guys, college guys, Euros, people playing in Europe. Like, a lot of times, those guys have just as good of skills. And if they're not playing at full intensity, they can even look better than some NHLers. But it's the NHLers' ability to, like, read the game and apply their skill that is the difference. And that it's a much more mental game than I think people really give it credit for. And one of the things that had me thinking about that was David Perron was answering some questions. He did a Q&A, and some people were asking about when teams decide to dump the puck in. And what he was saying is that there's more that goes into it. Like, it depends what period it is. Like, if you have the long change and your D don't get opportunities to get off as much, they actually change the strategy mid-game. And everybody knows that they're going to do it, and they understand why. So there's guys like going in for the dump in and stuff. So it really is a very intellectual game that there are very few dumb players that can be successful just because they have such incredible skill.
Yeah.
But you really need a lot of intelligence to play.
No, I agree. Perron is a very smart player as well.
Yeah, he did pretty well in the All-Star game.
He did. He definitely deserved to be there. It was cool seeing him represent St. Louis.
I guess we should talk about the Shooting Stars.
Was that the flipping one?
That was the one over the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So an interesting idea.
Yeah.
But confusing nonetheless.
Not great television, I didn't
Not think. Great television. Yeah, I think they needed to get away from their rigidness of, like, having the things be completely accurate versus, like...
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, that was the problem. Like, if you want to make it entertaining, you have to kind of, like, bend the rules a little bit. And
we will not sacrifice the integrity of the Shooting Stars competition for the excitement of the fans.
This first year competition in the NHL All-Star Skills.
Yeah, I think it's... I didn't like... the time it took. Like, I thought the pace wasn't great.
Yeah.
They, I thought it kind of sucked that they all agreed apparently beforehand to just shoot for the 10 instead of try any strategy.
Which is bizarre.
So I didn't think that was great. Overall, I mean, I like the creativity behind it, but I almost think it might be better, like, in a horse style thing or something. Like, something where they're going against each other instead of watching one guy.
Right.
Yeah. Because I don't know. And then when players started missing, then it got to be kind of awkward. I don't know. It was not like I points for creativity, but execution not perfect, I don't think.
No. Slavin won the accuracy competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. 9.5 seconds.
pretty good. Although, I mean, I felt bad for Hurdle. Hurdle hit four targets in a row, and then he missed the last one like six times.
Poor Hurdle.
Yeah. Well, and then he got jobbed on the MVP in the game too.
What was the other one? The other one was the break, or it was like the goalie challenge or whatever. It was kind of like the breakaway thing.
Very confusing.
It was super confusing because like they kind of had multiple guys go, but not really. And then it was like
And they didn't explain it very well. Like it seemed like everybody was going to get 10 shots.
Yeah.
But then if they were making saves, they kept it going.
Right.
So then goalies faced different numbers of shots, and I thought they miscounted
a couple.
Like the broadcast did.
Yeah, I thought so too.
It was confusing.
Super confusing.
Because I think for some goalies, they showed how many saves they got overall. And then then they figured out that they were doing it wrong, and then they started counting how many they got in a row. And luckily, Binnington won by so much that it wasn't...
Yeah, it didn't really matter in the end. Yeah, which was good. I mean, it was nice to see an all-star from St. Louis win.
Yeah.
You could tell the crowd was pretty pumped up after that.
How'd you like the women's game?
I liked it a lot, actually. Yeah. I didn't see the whole thing. I just watched the highlights, the condensed version of it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But I loved the intensity of it. It felt pretty genuine, which it usually does between Canada and the U.S.
Yeah,
for sure. And it was a decent display, and I mean it was a tight game, which is I mean, what else can you really ask for?
Yeah, and it had a little bit of everything. I mean, there was there's some really really fantastic goaltending, especially by Canada's goalie, who unfortunately I'm blanking on her name, but she was exceptional. I thought that there was some good battles actually, like. Especially when you knew that the All-Star game was going to lack that. I thought it was kind of nice to see people actually checking and taking the puck off each other. And,
yeah.
They really did want to win. Weirdly, the American coaches messed up and didn't pull the goalie until 12 seconds left.
Yeah, that was bizarre. That was a super weird decision. It's like they didn't realize.
I don't know if they thought it was three periods, but the goalie was trying to come out. And nobody was looking. So, it was pretty weird. I thought that was great. It was a really good showcase. I think that at the very least, it showed that there are female players who are like high skill level.
Yeah.
Like comparable skill levels. Like their hands, the moves that they can make in like with speed.
Yeah.
Is comparable to some NHLers. Like they really are. There are some exceptional female players right now.
I really, really do hope that the league gets to that point where they feel like it's strong enough that they can help support a full-fledged women's league that they, you know, that they kind of sponsor or whatever or whatever they have to do, or put it in successful markets, like places they know it's going to be successful to have a women's team there type thing. I really hope this is the NHL is not just dipping their toes in for the sake of whatever, that this is actually them kind of considering like, hey, this might be a viable option for us to start moving forward with this, right? Put a couple teams in Canada, put a couple teams in the States, and the bigger markets, we know it's going to do well, have like an 8 or 10 team league and have that attainable goal for women. Cause the one thing that was kind of sad about the CWHL folding last year was the fact that, okay, now these girls who work extremely hard and maybe even sometimes harder than the men to make their teams or whatever, that window of opportunity to kind of live that lifestyle of being an athlete is kind of shrinking and those opportunities are going away, right?
Yeah.
And it's clear that they have tons of skilled players and they deserve the chance to showcase their game as well. So, I mean, I hope the NHL comes to their senses on that. Well, and it can work out.
You know, and who knows? This might have been the spark of something, because the Professional Women's Hockey Association, they put on exhibitions, right? And they sold out in Victoria.
That's awesome.
Like the next one that they did after that All-Star
game.
So, I mean, that's a good sign. Like Victoria might be a place, right?
Yeah, you never know, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be an NHL market, because...
Yeah.
You also don't want to put them anywhere that they could potentially fail, right? I mean, you obviously need some bigger markets to kind of help drive ticket sales, but that doesn't mean that they put a team in Calgary and they play out of the dome or something, right? Because that's just an unattainable level of like success that they would need to be able to sell out the Dome.
Well, and games. You already have the Hitmen
right
playing out of the Dome as well, like the Hitmen and the Flames.
So you have three teams skating there. Yeah, it just three wouldn't teams. Make any sense.
I mean, if they didn't have that many games, but
right.
Yeah. So, but really good showing. I think you can see a lot of skill out there, and hopefully, it's inspiring for some players growing up seeing that they might get to play on TV. They might get to show their skill.
Yeah. No. Exactly. And that's what you want, right? We want to have equal opportunity for every athlete to be able to kind of reach that height and that level and that kind of thing. So hopefully. Okay, moving on to the actual games themselves.
Yep.
So we start with the Eastern game.
Yeah, the game sucked.
Yeah, I was going to say, I only saw highlights. So we got to go off you on this one. You said it was terrible. They didn't try until like 5 minutes left in the game.
Yeah, so they're doing the two periods, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did not start trying at all. Like, the most entertaining thing was kind of hearing the celebrity coaches, which was not great either. it was like Jenna Fisher and John Hamm.
Yeah, which is cool. They're both huge Blues fans. So, yeah.
Yeah, so really not good. You could see... It made me like David Pastrnak even more, which I didn't know was possible because he was one of the only people trying out there, and he just was taking the puck off guys so easily, and he had a really good performance, but nobody else was really trying up until 5 minutes left, and it was a garbage game. And what happened was, I think the guys in the next game were watching,
and they were like,
and they realized you had to put something into it right off the bat.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, the Pacific Central game was much, much more entertaining.
Yep.
And featured a couple nice plays by old Mr. 19 for the Flames.
Yeah, he was good. And, I mean, a little bit of chemistry with some intense rivals. So, one of the best moments of the whole weekend is when he set up Dreisaitl, and Dreisaitl buried it, and then neither of them even looked at each other. They just both skated separately to the bench. Dreisaitl said something. People were asking him questions after. He was saying he was joking. That was pretty funny. I thought that Pettersson and Tkachuk also had some pretty good chemistry too. Yeah,
for sure.
So I liked it because I think that the Western Canadian teams are bizarre in that Calgary, I think, has the best overall roster, but the stars on Vancouver and Edmonton are so clearly stars.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas,
yeah.
like, Gaudreau's kind of fallen off quite a bit, and he was really the only guy that they had that was in that category. Like, Giordano was, but D are different.
Yeah.
So I was really happy to see Tkachuk show off how skilled he actually is, because now people know him for the Cassian thing and all that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he looked awesome out there.
Yeah, which is awesome. David Rittich had a great showing.
David Rittich, which I think is hilarious, actually had a better save percentage in the All-Star game than like 9 or 10 starters have in the league. Yeah. Which is
pretty hilarious.
Like this is talking about like Bobrovsky and stuff. So Rittich was really good. And then, they got to the final. The final was not bad.
No, not bad. It was neat to see the Tkachuk brothers play against each other.
Yeah, Matthew backchecked pretty hard on Tkachuk at one point. Tomáš Hertl, we talked about how he unfortunately got hurt. I thought he looked really skilled. Like that backhand toe drag where he walked around like Petrangelo or something was unreal. He got quite a few goals. I thought he was great. It was cool to see. At the end, it was Giordano and Rittich and Dreisaitl and McDavid in the last minute. And they actually started playing defense. Like, Gio blocked a shot and McDavid, like, tipped a pass and stuff. And you saw they really did want to win.
So. Yeah. I mean, I think the guys are like, oh, we're just happy to be here up until probably that moment where they realize they actually can win. So
yeah.
So it's like hey, we can actually do this, guys. Well, let's try.
Apparently Gretzky, when he talked to them at the start, the whole Pacific team, they were saying, well, guys, let's go actually win this thing.
Yeah. I mean, and they obviously had the team to do it. I mean,
Yeah.
As you said.
A lot of stars in the Pacific Division right now. Yeah. Well, and it also helps when you cut out, like, the Coyotes and the Ducks. Don't even take players from their teams. Yeah. Oddly enough, there were no players from those teams. And then, so you had Kopitar.
I know the goal is to always pick one person from every team. Yeah. So every team's represented. But with all the bizarre, like, last-minute injuries and stuff like that and, like, illnesses and...
It's a stupid rule. And I saw something about Pascal Siakam from the Toronto Raptors. He was named a NBA starter in the All-Star game this year. And it was so meaningful. Like, he, like, posted a video and stuff. And one of the comments was that in the NBA, there's not enough spots to give everybody, like, a starter role, right? No. So it actually just pick the best players.
Yeah.
So it means something. Oh, yeah. And the NHL should really consider that because people, when you're talking about Hall of Fame and stuff, people start saying, well, it's an 8-time Hall of Famer. And it's like, well, Iginla should be in the Hall of Fame. But just as an example, Iginla was the only star on the Flames for a lot of years. Like, he was the guy, the only guy who's getting sent.
Yeah.
So it's not as meaningful, I don't think. And I think you could actually make it more fun to watch if you don't have guys like Tyler Bertuzzi out there.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you don't just try and scrape some guy off a team that is in the bottom of the standings and doesn't really deserve to have a guy there. And hey, the Flames had plenty of years where they were bottom of the standings, but Iginla was playing so damn good that he ended up going to All-Star games and stuff like that. So, again, they'll still pick the best guys, but it just doesn't mean just because you're a team in the league that you get a pass to get a player there, right?
Yeah, why on earth is Brad Marchand not there? Right? Why is Malkin not there? Like, you have legitimate stars that are staying at home or going to Mexico or whatever.
Whatever.
Which I'm sure is fine with a lot of them. But it's not as good for the league, and it doesn't... detracts from it, in my opinion, because you don't get to see the best players actually play with each other.
Right. But fun weekend overall. Quite harmless.
Yeah, not bad. And the players seem to have fun with it, and they seemed a little bit more charismatic. I think that this generation of players is understanding that they have to
sell
the league a little bit. So yeah, it was fun. I didn't mind it. Like, I don't always watch the All-Star game super closely. This year, I was able to watch the whole thing.
All right. So, last week in Period 3, we talked about Canadian teams and if they should be buyers or sellers. We kind of want to bring that back and talk about a few more teams that are kind of on the bubble right now and kind of based on their rosters, based on their games and all that kind of stuff. Should they be buyers or sellers at this point? So, actually start with the Florida Panthers, who currently hold down third in the Atlantic Division. They've only played 49 games. They're 28-16-5 for 61 points. They're 8-2 in their last 10, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I think they have a very legitimate shot of making the playoffs this year. Mm-hmm. Especially if their goaltender actually takes some time off during his break and gets his head right or whatever the heck's going on with him this year. But you could definitely see the influence of Joel Quenneville's there. Jonathan Huberdeau's having like this under-the-radar amazing season there.
Yeah.
We've talked at length about how great guys like Barkov are and the depth they have on that team. I think this is a team that needs to be a buyer. I think they need to figure out a way to get players on that team to help them make a decent run, because I think they can actually do some damage.
Yeah, me too. I think they should maybe be looking to, if they could bring in a decent defenseman, I think that might be a nice thing, because they have a really strong offense. I mean, they're with two fewer games played, they're only 2 goals back of Washington right now in
goals for.
So I don't think they need to make a lot of changes to their forward units. I think they've got a good mix of young guys and then guys just right in their absolute prime, like Huberdeau and Barkov and Trocheck.
Yeah.
But I think this is a team that you could definitely cut down on their goals against. I think maybe you can help out Bobrovsky by stabilizing the defense. But there are a good enough team that I think they'll be okay without that, but I think they could really kind of push themselves into being like a team that nobody wants to play against.
Right. And that's exactly it, right? Yeah. Like kind of the unknown for a lot of teams outside of their division, which is kind of nice. That's kind of how you want to be, right?
Right now we're looking at a Battle of Florida.
That would be cool. That would be a really neat thing. Yeah. Because of the way those two teams, like, they've had that geographical rivalry, but I don't think they've ever played each other in the playoffs. So yeah. I think that would actually be kind of a fun series.
I wonder if Florida could actually sell out a game in the playoffs.
I'm sure a lot of Tampa fans would travel for that, for sure. So then the team holding down the first wild card spot, unbelievably, is the Columbus Blue Jackets, who through 51 games played are 27-16-8. They have 62 points.
Yeah, they actually have more points than Florida.
And they are 8-2 as well in their last 10.
Yeah.
They are playing damn well. Now, I know this segment is supposed to be buyers or sellers. I think Columbus should do absolutely nothing.
yeah. Just let it be for a year.
I swear, man. Like, this is like, I don't know what chips they can push in. They pushed in so many last year. Yeah. Like, we've talked about this before. Like, I don't know what they can trade at this point.
We talked about it last week a little bit, like with Anderson and stuff. But yeah, I don't think they should do much at all.
No, not at all. Like, I mean, I think this is just, if they make
it somehow is working, don't mess with chemistry.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, and there's still guys to come back from injury and guys that can get better. And like we mentioned with Josh Anderson and stuff like that. So just let it be. And if you make the playoffs, that's amazing. And then build off of that.
Yeah.
Because maybe you can sell that to a free agent in the offseason and be like, look, we did it with these guys. Like, if you come play with this team, we're going to be damn good, right? So just below them is Carolina, who have played 50 games. They're 29-18-3 for 61 points. Had a little bit more struggling record as of late, 5-4-1 in their last 10. I mean, they're there again.
Yeah.
They got Justin Williams back.
Really good at home.
They're really good at home. Their home record 17-8-1. Wow. So Carolina's a tough place to play for sure. I feel like they need to do a little bit more though.
They lost Hamilton.
Right, to injury. But I mean, I would say they're one of the deepest teams on D,
which is crazy because they lost DeHaan and they lost Justin Falk.
Oh right. Yeah, of course they traded him. I read recently Jake Bean is like one of the highest touted defenseman kind of currently playing in the minors.
Yeah.
He's having an unreal season for Carolina's AHL team. And so I'm assuming he'll be up and playing with the team after their break here.
Great scouting
by them. Calgary kids. So all the best to him if he can finally kind of cement himself into a permanent NHL position. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's a good thing in a sense. Like,
You have
time to develop, but you also have to crack that D, which is really strong. I think they need to go out and get themselves a top six forward because I think they're going in, like outside of Michael Ferland not being there as he was last year, they're basically going in with a very similar-ish forward core.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, they even brought back Justin Williams.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And they got Dzingel, and he hasn't really done a whole lot, it feels like, there.
No. So, if I was them, I think I might want to strengthen down the middle a little.
Okay.
Because you got like Aho, you got Jordan Staal.
Yeah.
And then I think it's, who is it? It's McCaig, is it?
I think so.
So I just think that that's a team where you can maybe bring in some players to just solidify. So you're not getting beaten down as the series goes on and getting those bad matchups, you know, like on the road, because as we can see they're very good when they control the matchups, but almost a 500 team when they don't. So I mean, it's a good team, man. The Eastern Conference is crazy competitive.
Oh yeah. I mean, so just below them is Toronto, who we talked about last week. We all kind of know their deficiencies right now, but just below them is Philly. So Philly's played 50 games, 27-17-6, 60 points. They have a similar record to Carolina as of recently. They're 5-4-1, so they're on a little bit of a hot and cold streak themselves. But they had beaten like four of the top teams in the league right before going on their break. I know. So I feel like Philly's got a legitimate shot. Like these are four teams, and you include Florida in there, so five, and I'm including Toronto, that are all within points of each other, and they're just going to be scrapping it out until the very end.
Like, there's going to be some heartbreak.
Oh, for sure.
It's going to be like when Boston missed the playoffs that one year when they had like 98 points or something.
Oh, it's totally going to be like that. I mean, for my money, I think Philly for sure should be a buyer. They got to go in. They're having a good year. They're just not in it right now.
And they were patient for a really long time building up prospects and picks and stuff.
For sure.
I don't know. Like, from what you know about them, where would you try to strengthen for them?
It's a good question. I wonder if they could use a depth defenseman.
Yeah.
Kind of. It feels like their D's quite young right now. Because I feel like their forwards are pretty established.
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of good forwards. You got Giroux and Voracek, although Voracek's fallen off quite a bit in the last few years. Kevin Hayes is like got that crazy contract, but he's playing pretty well.
Yeah, Couturier's had a really good season.
Yeah, Couturier's like I've seen him as a front runner for the Selke this year.
There you go.
Konechny, I think, is excellent.
Yeah, that's another good one. And they still have Nolan Patrick out, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, potentially he comes back and provides the team with a little bit of a spark or something like that.
Yeah.
So I feel like they probably need to lean a little bit more on their D. Their goal differential, they're only plus +8 right now. They've scored 158. They've let in 150. So, and I wouldn't ever say their goaltending's bad because Carter Hart has been quite good this year.
Yeah.
Brian Elliott's been fine. So, and that's kind of a tandem that you'd want. You'd want a young guy learning from a veteran. So it's like that I wouldn't change that.
Yeah. I think, yeah, if I was them, I think maybe, like you said, focus a little bit more on depth and not so much on high end, just because I would be worried if I was them about spending a bunch and then walking into, like, Boston or...
Oh, yeah, like making it as a wild card team and getting either Boston or Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would just be, again, heartbreak, right? So
it doesn't seem that they have any obvious deficiencies that you're gonna, like, they tried to address that with Hayes,
right?
So yeah, I think that for them it's probably gonna be more of a focus on just depth.
Yeah. All right, well, moving on to the West. As we know, the Pacific Division is tighter than absolutely anything right now. It feels like the Central Division, the three teams at the top right now are St. Louis, Colorado, Dallas. And even though there's a 10-point spread between St. Louis and Dallas from first to third there, then the next bump down is Chicago, which is another 6-point spread. So it feels like we're talking more about the teams that are fighting for the wild card here versus the teams in the Central Division. Like, I think those three teams, I think, are going to stay there the entire time now.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas has a 5-point clearance at the moment, and I think they're a pretty good team, like, especially compared to Chicago. So I think it's probably just gonna be the wild card teams battling it out.
So we start with wild card team one right now, which is the Vegas Golden Knights. They played 52 games, 25-20-7 for 57 points. They're 4-5-1 in their last 10. They have been struggling this year.
Not much of a post-coach firing bump.
No, they definitely haven't been, which probably shouldn't shock many people because, as far as I've heard, Gerard Gallant's liked by his players. So I don't think that was the right decision to make to inspire the team.
Yeah.
The tough part with Vegas, as we know, is after having success so quickly, so early on, they basically, in Vegas terms, cashed in all their chips right away, acquired big name free agents, spent a lot of money. Yep. They are basically at the cap ceiling with the team they have, which is a good team when they play well.
Yep.
But I don't know what they can do.
Yeah, it almost feels like a Sharks situation. Like, it's not as dire because they have better goaltending than the Sharks do. But it's I don't know where they can really make changes.
Right, unless they're going to trade kind of something significant away. And I think they kind of already have done that.
Yeah.
Like, when they traded for Pacioretty and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And when they made that bad move to trade for Tatar, they traded away way too much to get Tatar out of Detroit. And then I felt like they didn't get enough of a return to trade him to Montreal.
Yeah.
So, well,
yeah, because they gave Suzuki with him. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Yeah. And then Eric Brandstrom. I mean, I haven't been super impressed with him in Ottawa, but
no.
That and a first for Stone. Like, Stone's a great player, but.
Yes.
Not maybe having the impact I thought he would.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of agree with that. I think a lot of people would. Maybe not living up to that contract he signed.
Like, I'm shocked he wasn't an all-star, for example.
Right. Yeah. Good point. So for me, it almost feels like I just don't know what they can do.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're kind of stuck. They're one of those teams that are just kind of stuck.
Yeah. And maybe that's what they were thinking. Like, all we can really do is do a coaching change.
Right.
But I really liked their coach. So, yeah, it was such a weird thing.
I didn't like that at all. Yeah. So then we move on to team two in the wild card, which is Arizona. Also 52 games, 26, 21, and 5. Also 57 points. Well, they made their move, but this is weird. They have been playing worse with Taylor Hall, which is not great.
Yep.
But that may be trying to funnel too much offense through him or too much changing of the lines or whatever.
Well, you had the number one goalie in the league who went got down hurt. Injuries.
Yeah, so exactly. So that's a huge factor.
Yeah.
He's coming back like this week or this weekend. Like, he'll be back within the next couple games for them, which is good news for them. But as I was going to say, you say they pulled their shot with Hall, but remember they traded kind of a bunch of no-name prospects and a couple picks. So, I mean, they still have, like, maybe a bullet in the chamber if they really felt like they could pull another something. They still have on-roster players they could technically move if they needed to, or potentially more picks or whatever, because they've been stockpiled with those forever.
You know, what I do kind of wonder is with a conditional pick, though.
Right. Oh, yeah, good point.
I think their first might be tied up. Like, I don't know if you can trade your first, or maybe you can trade your first and be like, we're not signing Hall.
They do still have a couple high-end prospects that they didn't move in that Hall deal, which people talked about, right? That they didn't have to get rid of those guys.
But again, I think it's, I don't know that that's a market where you're going to be getting, like a ton of free agent interest.
Yeah.
So like, do you want to clear out the cupboards? Like, I think they need to keep having young guys come in. So like, I don't think you want to waste your young guys on rentals.
Right.
Because those are the young guys that you do to get significant players on the roster. Because that's how they got, like, Stempniak, and that's how they got, who's that center who they got from Chicago? Schmaltz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if I was them. I think, well, the big thing is to see what comes when Kemper comes back. Because
yeah, so the good thing for them is they have a couple weeks.
They might go
weeks.
On a run here.
Yeah, if they go on a run again when Kemper comes back, that makes a huge
difference. Because we talk like they're out of it, but I mean, they're 1 point back of Edmonton. So
hey, that's the thing about the Pacific Division. Yeah. Yay.
So they're equal games played. Now, Nashville.
Nashville's won two in a row, and like, they've won back-to-back games. Now they won tonight. So they have now played 50 games. They're 24, 19, and 7 for 55 points. So they're 2 points out of a wild card spot, but they're still 5 points out of their division, so they need to make quite a bit of ground there. I don't know, man. I don't know with them. Like, For me, it feels like this should be a year that they sell a couple of assets and do one of those kind of like reworks on the fly type thing.
Like a New York Rangers thing? You think they should just... I guess New York didn't do a rework on the fly. They did a full sale.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they should. Like, I think they should be sellers. I agree.
I just... If they squeak in, like, what are they going to do? Right? Like, they just haven't looked dangerous all year. Their goal differential right now is +1. They've let in 168 goals this year. Like, that's a lot for a team that is pushing on the playoffs. Like, in comparison, the team 2 points above them in Arizona has only let in 142 goals. That's a 26-goal difference, right? Like,
yeah, Nashville's almost unrecognizable.
I know, right?
Like, they used to be built from that, like, outstanding defense, and now they have, like, a decent defense with a pretty good forward group.
And but questionable and goaltending.
And now their goaltending seems to have taken a big dip.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not the team that they used to be, for sure.
Just below them is the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Which is surprising. I think it's surprising, although I liked a lot of the moves they made. And it's not so much a retool. It's just they're trying to figure out a way to make their team competitive around the contracts they are anchored by.
Yes.
So they played 51 games, 24, 21, and 6 for 54 points. So they're only 3 points out of the wild card. 6-4 in their last 10.
Yeah. Okay. So a team, though, that has a ton of cap room because Brent Seabrook is down, and so is they have another significant contract out. So they're going to have more cap room than they've had in years. They might be a team that could buy.
They're a big market team, right? Like, yep. They're a team. I mean, we all know the league would like to see them back in the playoffs and stuff like that. Their fan base is still crazy about them. It's not like they've gone away just because they've had, you know, two or three poor seasons. They do remember that they won three championships last decade. So, you know, and you still got those significant guys. I mean,
you got Kubalik. He's got freaking 21 goals.
Yeah.
And he's a rookie.
Yeah. And he was a guy that got let go by LA and probably not the smartest move by them.
No, not looking like it. So they're a team. I wonder if you might see like Peugeot end up there.
Interesting. That's a good move.
Yeah, because you could strengthen that top six, bring in some more skill.
Well, and like Chicago knows, the guys that they acquire, they could legitimately sign depending on kind of their status and who they are and that kind of thing. Because like you said, they're going to have a little bit more cap room going into next year.
Yep.
It's an attractive place to play. I mean, yeah, it might be time for them to kind of make a move and see if they can kind of make it this year and start to get back into that conversation of being one of the more talked about and feared teams in the NHL again. And then, I mean, do you think Minnesota has a chance?
No, nope.
They're 5 points out right now.
No, I think they're done.
They're done?
I think so. I mean, if you look, their goal differentials all the way at minus 10. I mean, Calgary's is minus 12 or whatever, but Calgary's a weird team. I don't even think Calgary's comparable to other teams. Minnesota, I think, like, if you look at their road record, it's awful. 9-15-2. That's by far the worst road record of any of the teams. I just think that it's a program that they had a bunch of guys who looked like they might be stars. Like, guys like Granlund and stuff that didn't really become stars. And same with Dumba.
Yeah.
I think Dumba, like, last year, he was leading the league in goals for defensemen when he got hurt.
Right.
This year, he's like, people are like, is he worth a first round pick? Like,
so they'll be probably legitimate sellers then.
I think they're done.
Yeah, I think it's time for a retool there. Well, that'll do it for us this week. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the podcast. We'll be back again next week, and please tell all your friends about us. Subscribe and keep listening. From the Point, I am Andy Sashu.
And I'm Jim Malloy.
Talk to you next week.